Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. We're just 2 days into 2024, and there's no doubt about the wave of new networks reaching viewers through smart TV products and bundles. It's big, and it's building, thanks in part to ventures like Fast Channels Television. Chief Executive Russell Foy joins me next. Speaking of smart TV sets and devices, what do they have brewing in new features and apps for 2024? Philip Swan, the TV answer man, clues us all next half hour. And Netflix kicks this year off with a scamming tale that's all true. Man on the Run debuts Friday, and our second hour features executive producer and director Cassius Michael Kim. Also ahead, Game of Thrones 2 is forthcoming, and our first passive trivia question of 2024, 7 prizes in play. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network and more than 40 other great podcast destinations. This just in, it's 2024, and tomorrow will be televised. Our opening hour is brought to you by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, and mixed drinks on the go, wherever you go. 43 degrees at the top of this hour, and wherever you are, we welcome you to a wonderful new year and our first 2024 episode of the program about TV's current and future. Great to have you with us. Wonderful guests coming your way on this first of 3 episodes this week, 2-hour show today, 2-hour show Friday, and an episode tomorrow as well. And we invite you from the get-go to be involved with our guests and yours truly. How do you do that? You pick up the phone and you dial with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And if you're shy about the phone, that is no problem with us. We invite you to get into our chat room. SimonApple04 is the name of the room. Snowman James is already in, so we welcome you in as well. And you can come in too. It's SimonApple04. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And doing something special for our first episode of this new year, we're only going to have one commercial break in each hour, usually toward the bottom of the hour. So to give you more time to be with our guests and to be part of the program too. We will get to our first guest, Russell Foy from Fast Channel TV. He'll join us live from Toronto, Canada after these news notes. Game of Thrones, The Tune Age, is a work making big progress at HBO. According to game creator George R.R. Martin through a blog post, several animated series set in the Thrones dimension are under development, and HBO appears ready to give thumbs up to a pair of them. Also, 9 Voyages, promised series on the voyages of the Sea Snake, will go into development as a tune rather than live action due to budget issues. 2 other game-derived animated epics have been dropped at HBO. No comment or confirmation yet on their side. And one quickie for you, Apple TV Plus will keep Gary Oldman's espionage drama series Slow Horses going for a 5th season. Season 3 wrapped up on December 27th. And that is news notes for today. One of the biggest stories that we follow here on this program is the incredible variety of new television networks that have hit the scene in the last few years, particularly because of the growing capacity and capability of smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles like Philo TV, Fubo TV, Zumo, Pluto TV, Tubi, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that is getting a lot of people to be involved with television. Many of them who are creating these channels are independent players. Many are people and organizations of color. And it really, and by the way, we are not just talking about, you know, putting together a single program channel like the All Seinfeld channel, the All Big Bang Theory channel, the All Murder, She Wrote channel, et cetera. We are talking about content that is new and original, whether it's for a general audience or for a niche audience. And one of the organizations that is trying to put these new networks together is an organization out of Canada called Fast Channels Television. And joining us live in an internet radio exclusive from Toronto is the chief executive at that organization, Russell Foy. Russell, happy new year. Happy to have you with us.
Thanks, Simon. Same to you and all the listeners.
Why do you think we are seeing this incredible splurge of new networks?
I think there's a number of reasons, but probably the biggest one is the cost of entry. In traditional broadcasting, it was very expensive to launch a channel. Now, if you have compelling content, meaning that you've got enough people that are interested in the content you're creating, and you have a way of reaching or communicating to let those people know the content's available, there's basically no additional cost, right? So it's very easy to get into the game, but you have to have compelling content and you have to have a way of reaching people.
And in the case of your organization, Russell, you're not doing, as I said, the single all Where Does She Wrote, all Prices Right, all this, all that rerun channel. You are actually working with content makers who have an original vision to share. How many organizations and entrepreneurs are you working with to get these channels out the door?
Yeah, first, we're more of a technology partner. So we've been around, you know, 9+ years building out subscription-based platforms for operators. So we got into the FAST business as our clients asked us to help them move into this space. But to answer your question, we have a combination. There's three different things we do. One is we make our 200 channels available to any TV streaming platform where we can make money together, right? Second thing is we help build FAST channels or playouts, making them compliant for ads to serve. And third is we build out platforms. But in terms of people that we're working with, there's approximately 200 different channels. Now, some of those channels, I will work with one partner that might have 35 channels, for instance. So they will have multiple channels. In terms of TV streaming platforms, we place some or all of our channels on currently 60 different TV streaming platforms, like the ones you mentioned at the beginning.
And some of these platforms now have, like a Pluto TV, like a Tubi, like Freecast and others, we're not talking about, you know, 20, 30, 40 channels here and there. We're talking about hundreds of channels, 200, 300, 500, I believe Freecast close to 800 channels. How do you deal with bundles like this in terms of making sure that the content you bring them is going to get adequate promotion, adequate marketing, really get involved with viewers?
Well, that was the first point I made in terms of two things that are needed to succeed in this space, right? If you're in a subscription world, the old world, you made money just being a part of a package. You got your part of the subscription revenue. In the ad-based world, you only succeed if people watch your channel and an ad is played. So if you're a content owner and you have compelling content, that's not enough. Because as a content owner, we can help. I could have 1,000 channels tomorrow if I wanted to. I don't want to because the biggest challenge is the marketing, what you asked. And so a content owner, I can help build and get their channel placed, but I can't force people to watch it. So the content owner also has to do marketing to drive their potential interested viewers or users to watch their channel where we get it placed. So it's very, very heavily, it doesn't cost as much to get in, but there's a much more significant cost in the marketing because you have to then be able to drive the interested people to watch your channel wherever we get it placed. So for instance, if you have a channel like the one that you're doing an interview, one of my customers later this week with Hip Hop TV. So he has compelling content for a specific market, but he also has a way of reaching the potential users through the influencers and his other members. So I can help create his channel, help launch his channel, help get his channel placed, but then what he has to do is turn on the afterburners and then tell his audience via an influencer, via social media, via an email list, whatever they have, to say, watch my new channel on this platform or on these platforms. So long answer to your question, but it's very, very heavily the success is based on their ability to both have compelling content and a way of reaching those users.
Mm-hmm. How many proposals do you get for new channels, let's say, in a given week? And how do you sort out, you know, what you should definitely be involved with from what you don't or shouldn't be?
Per day, we'll get approached by, you know, 1 to 3 different content owners. And what we'll do is we'll explain what it takes, as I've just told you, right? And so we're going to discourage the people that don't have compelling. If you've got the same content as everybody else, if you've just gone and licensed the same thing that's up on every other platform, why is someone going to watch your channel if they can see it on other places? So you don't have compelling content. The second thing is if you don't have a way of reaching or marketing these people, a lot of people in the industry, other vendors, will charge a significant fee to set you up and to manage you on a monthly basis. We do almost everything in a revenue share model. So we don't take large fees because we're trying to encourage content owners and platforms to get into the business. But with that, we are very careful to not just bring in any channel in the market. because it doesn't make sense if it can't succeed, if you don't have the marketing capability, if you don't have that unique content. So in our approach, when we're talking to people, we'll go through and we'll explain, listen, yeah, there's a lot of money to be made in this market, but it's not easy. So, you know, I have 200 channels. Everyone says their baby is beautiful. But you know what? Sometimes some babies are cuter than others. I can't gauge how good your content is. But if you've got the same stuff, if you've licensed the same stuff as 60 other platforms, then how is your channel going to be any different, right? I think what you mentioned up in front in terms of having unique or content specific to a genre, that's what makes people stand out and how we select the channels we go with.
Fast Channels TV, that is the channel organizer, distributor, associate, if you will, that we are spotlighting as our first subject in 2024, right here, right now, live on Tomorrow Be Televised. Russell Foy is the chief executive of this organization. He joins us live from Toronto, Canada, this half hour on TWBT. Happy to have you with us on our first of three episodes in 2024, all this week, today, tomorrow, and Friday at this hour. Sam Alma with you live from New York, 44 degrees right now in the Big Apple. And we invite you to part of the program. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. On our second episode of this new year tomorrow, we're going to spotlight a new, very unique scripted TV series. It's sort of an East-Meets-West affair, and it's called Cross My Mind. It premiered last month on Chime TV, the Asian American network. And we will talk to two key people that made this unusual series possible. Here in the U.S. of A., we'll talk to the co-founder of Wong Fu Productions, Wesley Chan. And we'll also, we hope, live from Hong Kong, first time I've ever had a guest from that area, we'll have the director from the, you might say, the Netflix-type service up there called My TV Super, Thomas Lowe. That's Wesley Chan and Thomas Lowe from Cross My Mind. Now you can watch on Chime TV, the Asian American Network. It's running, by the way, on Charter Spectrum Systems here in the Big Apple and in Los Angeles and across the country, other cable operators. It also is part of a mega content service called Golden TV that is available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. So we'll have those two folks tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Russell, what are some of the most popular services that you work with that have found success here in the U.S., in Canada, and elsewhere around the world?
Yeah, it's there's the big names. Like, we've built a channel that we have on Samsung. Samsung's one of the giants. And then there's many others. So instead of listing, you know, don't want to play favorites or anything, I think there's a number of new channels, and the ones that are coming up are the ones that I find most interesting, right? Because it's hard. You've got Pluto, you've got other people that have already taken or claim a stake of the property. So how is a new property going to come in? And so I think that's probably a more interesting approach to your question. For instance, there's one that has a Christian-based following. They've been a subscription service for 19 years. They have 60 Christian channels that they make available. They're launching a fast option. So they're going to make a part of their Christian lineup. I think they have 60 channels, maybe 20 of them available for free, and marry that with other content. So when we build out a platform for a project, it's not only the technology and the apps, but then we layer in our 200 other fast channels and our 2,000 VOD assets to complement what they have. So when you land and you see the app, you're going to see their content, what makes them different. But as a Christian that watches Christian programming, after church, I may like to watch a movie, or I might like to watch some sports. So we provide that additional content on top. So that's an example of how, and they're different from someone like a Pluto because they have a lineup of Christian content that you can't get on Pluto. So I think that's what's going to be different, Simon, is what new platforms can come out that can be different or unique in order to attract an audience that's not already using Pluto or another service.
Incidentally, Russell, when you talk about Christian programming, are we talking about religious services or evangelistic programming as opposed to, let's say, faith or values-based scripted series, unscripted reality programming, and so forth?
Well, this service, their name is Glory Star. They have a combination. So a lot of it is Christian programming where they'll work with the churches and help them get their message out. But then they add that. They'll take and create a lineup of movies that have a Christian or a faith-based lineup and create a rail of that content, right? And so it's a blend. It might be a combination. So you can have live content, previously recorded content, movies, sports, you can mix it up. Most of the services that are out there, it's not just fast linear channels. It's a combination of linear channels and VOD assets. Some people prefer to watch, you know, file by file. Some people prefer to just sit and watch the programs that they're used to on a channel.
It sounds like Glory Star is trying to become sort of its own bundle.
Well, they have been for 19 years, right? So now what they're doing is taking a part of their content and moving it into the fast space. So they'll keep monetizing with their traditional subscription service. They're not going to turn that off. They're going to take some of the content and make it available for free, right? So it's a blended service. And that's also a misconception. Subscription services are not going away. Fast is just another way of monetizing. And we encourage the content providers that come to us is that fast is just one option. If you have a feature film, you're going to put it in the theater first. When it comes out of theater, you're going to go on some transaction-based service. When it comes out of that, it's going to go into some subscription-based service. When it comes out of that, it might go into a fast service. So you want to monetize any and every way possible your content. Fast is just one option, right? You shouldn't be limited to that. Or if you can license your content to one of the big guys, then take that money. Once that licensing's finished, maybe you cycle it through as a part of a fast lineup.
Yeah. I should point out, for those who may be a little acronym crazy, that FAST stands for Free Advertiser Supported Television. It is a television network that operates like a TV network, like an ABC, CBS, NBC, in terms of a 24/7 schedule that is scheduled and takes advertising. Although limited advertising, let's say 3 to 5 minutes per hour, as opposed to what the broadcast and cable networks do, which is now running like 20, 21, 22 minutes per hour with promos. Russell, you mentioned Samsung before, and one of the things we have seen develop over the last, particularly the last 12, 18 months, is that the smart TV set makers are also doing their own bundles. And they're not just being channel aggregators, they're being channel creators. For example, LG has created a game hub. They've also created the NCAA Champions Channel, which is all about NCAA championship events and so forth. How is working with them similar or different than working with the likes of a Pluto or a Zumo or a Tubi?
Well, if you take a TV manufacturer, there's two ways of looking at it, right? One is they have their own consumer offering. For Samsung, I think it's called Samsung Channels. So when you buy a Samsung TV, you open it up. TV Plus, yes, Samsung TV Plus, thank you. So when you open up that TV, you're going to see their offering. The second way, Samsung, they have the store. They have accounts where you can build an app and have it on Samsung and download it from their store account. Same with Roku. Roku has the Roku channel, I think I'm calling it the right thing, which is their consumer offering. Mm-hmm. But people can also build apps and put it on Roku. So a TV manufacturer has a bit of an advantage because they have a audience, right? That way of reaching people. And so they can offer their content and manage it as a service, but then also have others write apps that run on their platform. And so the big advantage for a TV platform like that is that they have an audience of users that have their TVs. So certainly gives them advantage. A content owner that might have compelling content, they have their advantage. They have content that they can make available wherever they want. They could have a TV series or a live show that they have the rights to, and they can say, if you want to watch this, you have to come to my app. So there's advantages on both sides. If you're a manufacturer of hardware like a TV, you have an automatic potential audience. But if you're a content owner and you have very compelling content and an audience that is interested in that content, well, you have a way. No one likes, I don't like, who wants to install another app on their Roku when they get home at night, right? You have to have a very compelling reason to go to that Roku and search for another app and install it. And so that's what we say. It's not easy, but once you have that user and you give them the content that they're looking for and you add more, it grows. When we start with a project, the Christian project I mentioned, or any project, they're going to have their content. When we build out their platform and their apps, they're going to promote their content. The banner is going to be their content. The first line of content or the rail is going to be theirs, maybe the second, maybe the third line. Then it will be our content. It's that ability to leverage that content that makes them unique and drives the users in. Once they're in there, you want to give them more content. And what we're finding is a project can start with their content, right? And then add in our 200 channels and our 2,000 VOD assets. So it's a nice package. But if they've got an audience, they're going to drive others that are going to be interested. Other content owners will come to them and say, can you load our channel? Right? We see what you're doing. We would like to be included in your package. So then they're going to get third-party content, and it will build. The challenge is getting started, which is why we've tried to take an approach to make it easy for a content owner or a platform to get into the market. Because once they're in and they have the audience and they have some content, it should grow, right? And if they don't have compelling content and they don't have an audience, you know, it'll just die in the vine, right? In terms of, but it's the content that is unique. So you asked what advantages does a manufacturer of hardware have? Yes, they have that audience. But it's the compelling content that is even more important. If you have that, you can also drive that audience.
Russell Foy, the chief executive of Fast Channel TV, he is our opening guest in 2024 and this first episode of the year here on Smart View Televised, joining us live from Toronto, Canada. Time out, I'm with you live from Nueva York. If a question or comment in our remaining minutes with Russell, make that call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Another two-hour episode coming away this Friday, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. You may not know the name Trusted Media Brands, but you might know some of the networks that they put together, like Fall Away, The Pet Collective, Family Handyman, and People Are Awesome. Jill Goldfarb, the Senior Vice President of Trusted Media Brands, formerly known as Duke and Media, she's our opening guest on Friday. And then one of the top TV observers, both TV and technology, who will be going to CES 2024 next week in Las Vegas, and we'll be interviewing people like Mark Cuban and Will.i.am and Linda Iaccarino, the Chief Executive Officer X or Twitter. Shelley Palmer, he will join me in our second half hour. And then in our second hour, we will be joined by one of the networks that that Fast Channel TV is working with, Hip Hop Television. The Chief Operating Officer, Talan Mahoub, will be with us. And finally, we'll talk to the president of an interesting service that's trying to be a unique mega-content channel for independent filmmakers and TV makers. It's called Sunstream. You'll meet Garrett Sutton, and then you'll meet the father and son duo who has put together an interesting made-for-TV movie out of Kentucky called Kangaroo Kids that premiered on Sunstream last month. And they are Brainstorm and Farah Richmond. That's all coming your way Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Russell, in terms of other networks that are popping, we just started 2024, of course. Hip Hop TV is one of the last networks that you premiered last year. What about some of the networks that are going to be launching this year? What can we look forward to?
Yeah, so there's two types of launches. One is a new channel, like Hip Hop is a channel that you would watch on a service, and then there's an actual service or a platform, so where Hip Hop gets loaded. So I mentioned Glory Star is one of the new platforms, the Christian-based theme. Another one that's interesting with a specific genre, and it's a combination of both. They have a channel, but they have a platform, is Nomad Slow. And slow refers to a genre of content. You remember the fireplace playing in the background, relaxation, quiet, you know, calming. And so that's the slow genre. So Nomad Slow had a subscription service, and they wanted to get into the fast service. So we've initially built a fast channel for them. So they have their subscription service channel, and now they have a fast channel. As an extension of that, they said, you know what, we've got 20,000 loyal users. We'd like, instead of just having our channel on other platforms, to have our own apps. And so then they moved into the next stage of actually having their own apps. So now you can go to the Roku store, the Fire store, so on, Apple TV, and get the Nomad Slow TV. In their case, they promote you land and you see their channel, their VOD content. And then we complement that by adding in after you've finished watching the slow content and you're relaxed, maybe you'd like to watch some news, some sports, some movies. And so they add in our 200 channels and our fast our VOD content. Another one, a new service, is Self-Made TV. This is a service that is pulling together sort of urban content. They have strong relationships with a number of the African-American colleges and universities in the U.S., and so they work with and have a lot of content in that market, and they obviously complement that with our additional content. So those are some examples of new services that are launching. And if anyone's interested in terms of the channels and the new channels, fastchannels.tv is the website, and you can view the content, all of our channels that are available there, and see the different platforms that they're available on. It's just fastchannels.tv.
Mm-hmm. Two more questions before I let you go. First of all, we are now starting to see interactive content and interactive services happen through your smart TV set, smart device, because of artificial intelligence, which allows you to control the set with your voice remote, gestures, by using an audio feature like Siri, Google Assistant, Alexa, and so forth. Is anybody that you're dealing with looking at doing interactive channels? Do you see that becoming at some point part of your business?
From a technology standpoint, as long as it doesn't interfere with the stream, it makes no difference to us. It's more of the app, it sounds. So any of that can be enabled as long as it doesn't interfere with the stream or the ads. So I think there's we've been in the technology business a long time, and I think a lot of the times people think of all of these wonderful applications and all the things that people can do, but I kind of believe that, 80-90% of the population, they expect to sit down in front of their TV and hit play and watch a movie, or hit play and watch a channel. And so some of these features that are developed, I think, are never used, right? Because the users now, you may have a very advanced users that might do some of that, but I think it's all about making it easy for a user to consume the content they want, not necessarily all the bells and whistles. I don't know if you remember at one point the NHL, I'm in Toronto, so I like hockey, but the NHL, they had some options on the TV where you could have, four or six different views, switch your view to watch from this angle, from this angle, from this angle. And they must have spent tens and millions of dollars on this. I don't think anyone used it. Like, who's going to be at your remote flipping to see camera one, camera two, right? In terms of, it's a pretty fast game. You just got to pay attention versus changing camera angles and such. So I'm not saying that stuff won't happen. I just think the majority of the users just want to find and watch the content, right? Make it simple for them. Don't give them too many buttons and options.
Yeah. We have about a half minute left before we have to move on, Russell. Two organizations started last year, the Independent Streaming Alliance and the Streaming Innovators Alliance, to get independent players to work with them on advertising. Are you encouraging the content makers you're working with to join those organizations to try to get more advertising, get more promotion, get more publicity to the public?
Anything that, we encourage them to do anything and all marketing that can drive traffic, right? But before you go out and spend a fortune, try something, right? If you want to buy some ads on Roku, or you want to buy some ads on Google, or you want to try something, because no matter how good it sounds, you don't know how it's going to be, how effective it's going to be for your market. So don't make a massive investment. Try multiple things, and when you see something that's producing results, spend more money with it. So just don't spend all your money in one spot. That sounds like a great idea. Ease into it. Find out what helps your market with your users and your content before, and then spend more with what works.
If you want to check out Fast Channels TV and the variety of new and upcoming network that they are dealing with that could come soon to your smart TV set, smart device, or multi-channel bundle, here's where you go, fastchannels.tv. That's fastchannels.tv. Russell Foy, thank you again for being with us and being our first guest on our opening 2024 episode. All the very best to you and all the content makers and channel makers you're working with, and I have a hunch, like with Hip Hop TV, we will be checking in with quite a few of them before this year is out.
Sounds good, Simon. Thanks for the time and to your audience.
You're very, very welcome. Have a super 2024.
All right, cheers.
Russell Foy, Chief Executive of Fast Channel TV, joining us live from Toronto, Canada. Now this word from BlendJet. If your blender is bulky and a pain to operate, well, give BlendJet the opportunity to make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks an easy pleasure. You know, BlendJet is so portable to work up a smoothie at the office, your favorite protein booster at the local gym, or poolside margarita. BlendJet is quiet to operate, rechargeable on the go, and right now it's being offered at a – so what are you waiting for? Go to BlendJet.com and grab yours today. Be sure to use the promo code TELEVISE to get 12% off your order, plus free 2-day shipping, and it's all on top of their New Year's price. Remember, all you got to do is go to BlendJet.com, grab yours today, use the promo code TELEVISE, get 12% off your order, free 2-day shipping, and that way you can blend anytime, anywhere with BlendJet. The TV answer man, Philip Swan, will join me live from Maryland as we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You'll see the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reach over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you want to rock this year, check out BTR Special today. That's Rock This Year, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, that's BTR 24/7 on YouTube. Welcome back to our second half hour of this two-hour episode of Tomorrow Be Televised, opening up 2024. Tom Allen with you live from Nueva York, 44 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Happy to have you with us. Well, those just joining us at the bottom of the hour. More guests coming up in the 90 minutes ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and dial in. Use this number, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up, after our next interview, we will have the first new classic trivia question of 2024, a record 7 prizes in play if you are first with the correct answer. When my next guest came on the program years ago, smart TV sets, smart TV devices were the exception to the rule. Now they are the rule. So what does my next guest think about it? Well, he's somebody who has been in the biz covering television and encouraging people to make TV a better, easy thing again. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us live from Owings, Maryland, another Internet Radio exclusive, the TV answer man himself, Philip Swan. Philip, welcome in, and Happy New Year to you.
Simon, how are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. And it's great to have you back with us. It's been way too long.
Yes, it has. But, you know, before we begin, I want to give kudos to Russell Foy on his comments on interactive television he just made. You know, for years and years and years, probably as long as we've known each other, people have been trying to push interactive TV at people, and most people don't want it. As Russell said, they just want to turn on the television and watch something. They don't want to have to sit around and try to find which angles and all these other things. It's become too complicated for people, and he's 100% correct that most people don't want it.
Well, we're about that thinking in a little bit. But first, I mentioned a moment ago before you came on that when we were on last time together, the smart TV sets and smart devices were the exception in people's households, not the rule. Here we are, since 2024, 90% of all U.S. households have these smart sets and devices, and they have multi-channel bundles, which give them the ability to see hundreds of channels at their leisure. What do you make of the scene of smart TV sets and devices going into this year?
I think that it gives people more convenience in entertainment, which is always an important part of success in our industry. With a streaming device such as Roku or with a smart TV with a pretty good number of apps, you have more choices of what to watch and when to watch it, and that people love that. Where the problem comes is when devices and the companies who make them tend to make things a little more complicated than they should be, create a little more difficulty in how to use the product, adding up technology that's not necessarily needed, but they do it because they can't help themselves. And that's where people usually have problems with these new devices. They love the concept of it. They love the basics of it. They don't like it so much when it becomes difficult to use.
Mm-hmm. So what would you recommend that these products do to get themselves more consumer friendly?
Be content with the essence of their product. Don't try to overload and beat the competition with things that people really don't want. You see it with Roku. Roku's a great product. I have Rokus all over my house. But you can just see them sitting there going, how are we going to get better than Fire TV and Apple TV and a smart TV? Well, let's load it up with all these new features. Let's create some new things on the interface that they're going to, we think are going to get people, you know, more things to do. People don't want it. Just make it easy to get to the shows and movies that they want to watch. They don't need all these other bells and whistles. And that's my advice to the industry at large. Make it simple. Don't think you have to overcomplicate it for people to somehow stand out in the industry. If you create a great product, that's all you need.
Let me go back to the interactive TV situation because, yes, this has been sort of the holy grail for a lot of television for decades. We've had Cube and Full Service Network and all sorts of ventures, and they've all failed for one reason or another because the consumer the technology was unfriendly, the content couldn't go in like a bunch of clicks and so forth. And what the smart TV set and device makers are now saying is this: we think we have come up with the way to make it simple. And that is artificial intelligence in the television set, in the television device, the Roku, the Apple TV set-top box, the Chromecast, the NVIDIA Shield, which allows you to use an audio feature like Siri, like Alexa, like Google Assistant through the TV set with your voice or your voice remote or your gestures that allow you to manipulate the set and have it all done with your voice. You don't need a separate smart speaker. You do it all with the television set. Well, what do you say in response to that argument, that we have made it easier for interactive TV to happen?
Have you ever tried to actually hit the button and do a voice using Siri or Alexa or connecting your smart device to your television? It's not that simple. And once again, a lot of these things are obviously created with the technology people in mind. It's created by technology people. It's created in a community where everybody around them, who surrounds them, are smart technology people. They don't think about the guy who's sitting in the house in Omaha or New Bern, North Carolina, or wherever, who doesn't understand all this stuff. And something as simple as connecting your Alexa to your smart TV is overwhelming to people. It's too much. Just sit there on the screen, show me on that screen with one or two button clicks how I can get to the show I want to watch. That's all I care about. I don't need any other fancy way of doing it. My answer.
Have you been checking the situation with video games lately?
Yeah, it's not my forte, but, I mean, I keep an eye on everything related to video.
One of the things that has happened in that field is that we are now seeing the idea of game hubs. Samsung has introduced one. LG has introduced, you mentioned Roku, where rather than have a console like a PlayStation or an Xbox on top of your television set, you use a joystick. And, again, I go back to the artificial intelligence software in the set, where you can, with that software, control a joystick. You point it at the TV screen and play the game that way. I did that last year at Playfronts here in New York from the Interactive Ad Bureau. Samsung had a demonstration of their hub, and I played Fortnite, and I played a racing game on the set, and it was pretty easy to maneuver. And it seems that the gaming world, from interviews we've done over the last year, both in person and on this program, there seems to be this sense that the video game world is starting to look at, hey, why should we have a console like a PlayStation or an Xbox on top of the set where you can do it through a joystick that's connected to your smart TV?
Yeah, I think that it's true, and I think that the TV industry, the smart TV industry itself, is actually thinking in those terms. How are we going to maybe get the box out of the equation? And that's where smart TV itself comes in. But I think, you know, the video game industry is usually catering to a niche, and it's not necessarily a niche that spreads to the public at large. It satisfies that niche of video gamers and people, particularly enthusiastic, ardent video gamers. But as people get older and et cetera, they don't necessarily go for the bells and whistles that are available on consoles or just regular video game services. So it's interesting. I think that they are, a lot of companies are looking for ways to get the box out of the equation, though, and I think that's without a doubt.
Yeah. One more interactive question, then we'll move on, Philip, and that is about advertising. Roku has made a big bet that they can come up with a system using a process called Action Ads where you can order a product or service through the television set, whether it's from Walmart, whether it's through Shopify, one of their national merchants, and so forth. And some people think you can do it off the TV set, and some people think you can do it with a QR code along with your smartphone while you're watching. What do you think about the role of advertising in terms of that could be, content, that could be a factor?
I think of the old definition of insanity where you try to do the same thing over and over again and continues to fail and you keep doing it. That's what I think. This is, you know, 2-3 decades. How are we going to figure out how to get people to order stuff on the television? This is, you know, the thing, again, the Holy Grail. But people are not terribly interested in doing that. It's not something that people are excited about. They want to watch television. Russell Foyd said it right. People tune in. They want to relax. They want to watch TV. That has not changed, and it's not going to change. And every effort to try to get people to do something that takes them away from simply having the enjoyable experience of watching a show on or movie on television is going to fail, period. It fails. It just keeps failing. Every effort to do this, going back to the height of interactive TV 20, 25 years ago when it was hot, the Q-Stick, or Q-Cat, rather, and all these products that are trying to get you away from being able to enjoy a show fail every single time. And I tell you something related to that. Remember 3D TV, how that was going to take over the world? Once again, it took you away from the relaxing pleasure of watching television. Because when you were watching in 3D television, you put these goggles on, and it was confusing, and it just takes away from the whole concept of relaxing and enjoying yourself in front of television or a tablet or even a smartphone. It's just chill out. That's what people want to do. They want it simple.
I do remember. I remember when ESPN had a 3D service for about a year, and did not work.
Did not work. There's a lesson there if people would just listen in the industry, but it seems like every 10 years or so, a whole new crop of executives get into the corporate suite and they turn around and go, oh, boss, I figured it all out. If we do this interactive thing, we're going to make billions. It never works. Never works.
Philip Swan, he is our guest this half hour, live from Owings, Maryland, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Some of them with you live from New York. Thank you for joining us on our first 2024 episode of the promo about TV's current and future. Let's hear from you. Make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04. My name is Showman James again in our chat room. So if you have a question, Showman, put it in the room or make that call. Coming up before the top of the hour, classic trivia question of the week, our first one of 2024, 7 prize in play if you are first with the correct answer. And incidentally, you can catch me in person tomorrow morning on Sports Newswire. That's the TV sports and sports news information program that comes your way Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on Sports Grid Network. Craig and the crew will join them. We'll talk about the college football bowl season. We'll talk about the union of the XFL and the USFL, now is the United Football League. And we'll also talk about how hockey really got the stick or the shaft yesterday in two separate ways. That's all coming up on Sports Newswire tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, with yours truly, Craig and the crew, on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets, devices, multi-channel bundles, Amazon Freebie included. Philip, if you're going to be at CES 2024, that's the big consumer electronics mega show in Las Vegas, what are you going to be looking for?
I'm not going to CES. Now, I haven't gone the last 3 or 4 years. I think the year before COVID, I finally said, you know, I don't think I need to go to CES anymore. And I think a lot of people kind of come to that conclusion. Although, if I live closer, I'm in Maryland now. I used to live in L.A. I probably would go still if I was in L.A. I was starting to find in the last 3 or 4 years that I went that I didn't really learn that much, sad to say. And the reason being is CES has become a convention of the hope and the promise, but not the reality. A lot of new products get introduced there. They never actually show up in a retail place. And a lot of content get introduced that never actually get implemented. And I just went, you know, I this is all interesting, but I'm not really learning about a lot of practical stuff. And so I just stopped going.
When you get questions from people for your website, and to you directly, what's the most common questions that people give you?
That's a good question. And it's the reason why my website exists and why the motto is Making Television Easy Again. You would be amazed, Simon, at the basic questions that people have that probably 98% of people in the industry would think that people know the answer to. And it's usually something like, why can't I watch the show I want to watch? Why is that sports game blacked out on my channel? Just simple stuff, right? But people don't know where to turn for that kind of information, and they don't know the answer. They don't have any idea how to find it, and that's they come to me with those kind of questions. Just basic stuff, like how do I connect to Roku? People are confused by that. You might think that's the simplest thing in the world. Yeah, if you've done it 5, 10, 15 times, it is. But if it's the first time out, second time out, boy, it can be intimidating just simply hooking up a Roku and then pairing your remote and all the things to go with it. So it's really the most basic stuff about watching television today that people are confused by, and they want to have their hand held and to show how to do this stuff.
Do you get a lot of questions about Roku or about Apple TV, the set-top box? Or how to work with a smart set like a Samsung or LG,
yeah,
or even a new player like Sharp?
Absolutely. A lot of questions about, do I need a smart TV? Can I just get by with a Roku? If I have a Roku, can it connect to a television? It's not a smart TV. If I have a 4K Roku, will it work on a non-4K TV? You know, that and about 5,000 other questions you could think of. Basic stuff that people are just confused by, yeah. All this stuff is so new to people and so confusing to people, and it's all come in a hurry at, you know, with streaming largely driving it, that people are just kind of overwhelmed by it all. It's not simply, you know, getting their old cable box and having the installer come and hook it up and being handed a remote anymore. Now it's like people have to figure all this stuff out on their own, and they're not usually equipped to do so.
Do you get clues from the questions you get, Philip, about the viewing tastes of people that reach out to you? For example, again, when we were on together years ago, there was no Netflix, there was no Hulu, there was no Prime Video, there was no Peacock or any of the Plus services, Apple TV Plus, Paramount Plus, et cetera. Now that we're in this era, what do you make of it?
Yeah, it's funny. It's one of the great things is getting that feedback from readers. I invite people, and anybody's listening now, ask me anything you want. It's free of charge. Just ask anything you want, and I'll answer. And it's really enlightening to get the feedback that I do and all the questions I do. It's like having your finger on the pulse of what people are thinking about all these new technologies related to television. And you do kind of get a sense of like where people are heading with this stuff. And often I will start to see a trend develop before anyone else does because I'll hear it. I'll hear it in the emails I get. So, yeah, it's very interesting to get that perspective.
I think we have a call, and we are going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where you're calling from? Go ahead. You're on the air. All right. We'll see if that person calls back in a little bit. Philip, we will continue. Incidentally, what do you think of these mega content? What do you think of Netflix and Hulu and Peacock and all the others in this genre?
You know, as somebody who's a big connoisseur of content, loving programming and wherever it is, I love all the choices. But I hear from my readers, they don't necessarily love all the choices. Yeah, they want to be able to have all kinds of programming available to them, but they really get bent out of shape when they have to subscribe to so many services to get watch all the sports they want to watch, or all the movies they want to watch, or certain shows, et cetera. They're basically, it's a big cry out I hear from readers that they want all these things bundled again. The bundle that everybody kept saying, oh, the bundle's going to die, it's all dying. Well, people actually kind of like the concept of the bundle, even if they don't like paying big money for it. But if, in theory, some company today put together a bundle of Netflix, Peacock, Paramount, Hulu, Max, et cetera, in one big fell swoop and made it semi-attractively priced, people would be buying it. They definitely would be buying it because it would be something that would make things a little more convenient for people, particularly if all the programming of those choices of those different streaming services were somehow conveniently and nicely put together in an interface so you didn't have to go hopping around apps looking for a show.
It seems with Netflix, Philip, that they have found one genre of television that is turning out to be a goldmine for them, and that's the sports documentary series, whether it is a series about the Pro Golf Tour, whether it's a series about Formula One racing, whether it's a series about tennis or whatever. And in some cases, they've been able to turn them into these made-for-sports events, like the golfer and Formula One drivers that were in the Netflix Cup in Las Vegas a number of weeks ago, and they're going to be doing a tennis match with two of the top tennis players, again, tied in with another sports drama series. It seems that Netflix has sort of developed its own super niche.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't as high on the Netflix Cup. I thought it was terribly done. Netflix obviously wants to get into live sports without actually bidding on real live sports that cost a lot of money. NFL, NBA, et cetera. So they want to create their own little niche of exclusive kind of seat-of-the-pants kind of sports productions like the Netflix Cup and the tennis match that's coming up in March. I just thought the Netflix Cup was poorly done. It was confusing. At the end of the show, the guy drops the trophy and, you know, they're running around and that's what to do. And it just seemed like, you know, kind of like a Benny Hill production. Not impressed with it. Netflix has got all the money in the world. If they really want to get in there and conquer that kind of category, they can do it. But I was not impressed with that first time out.
Mm-hmm. You are hearing the TV answer man himself, Philip Swan, joins us live from Owings, Maryland this half hour right here on Tawabi Televised, and happy to have him with us as one of our first guests of our first episode of 2024, coming away live and lively from Nueva York. 44 degrees near the top of the hour, Simon with you live from the Big Apple, and if you request your car maintenance with Phil, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up shortly, classic trivia question of the week, our first one of the year. And we have 7 prizes in play, including a brand new prize I think you're going to like. So stay tuned. Get your thinking caps on. If you're the first person to email the correct answer, you will be our first trivia winner of 2024. What's on your radar screen in terms of what you like, in terms of, let's say, shows from last year or shows you're looking forward to this year?
My favorite show right now is Fargo. I don't know if you watch it. It's on FX and then Hulu the next day. It's done by a guy named Noah Hawley, who's brilliant. The show it's in fifth season now. It is taken from the inspiration of the Coen movies. And
totally
you would
agree
think,
with you, Philip. Noah was on our show way back when he did his first series, My Generation, for ABC. It was a Thursday night 8 o'clock show, very highly underrated. A lot of people thought it was going to be a near a disaster. It turned out to be a very, very good show. ABC canceled it anyway after a season. But, wow, he has done a great job with Fargo. He's got the new version of Alien that will be he's working on now in Thailand.
Yep.
That FX will probably run, if not this year, next year.
He is a clever guy. You would think, oh, somebody's going to take the Coen Brother movies and do a show kind of based on that. It sounds like copycat stuff. It sounds, simplistic. But he does it in a way that makes it his own. And in some ways, he out-Coens the Coens. And he creates something that is truly original, even though inspired by their work. And it's just brilliant, and more people should watch it. And if you love Coen movies, you would love this show.
Mm-hmm. And from the get-go, incidentally, talked with the Coen brothers. So they were, they didn't meddle with what Noah did, but they still looked at what he was up to, and they have been big supporters of his show, of all five seasons of the show.
I think they're listed as executive producers, which, of course, in Hollywood doesn't necessarily mean a lot, but I think they've had, they're not just standing by entirely on it. I think they do get some feedback from Holly and so forth. So, yeah.
But that's the thing, is that Noah and his production team have really caught the spirit of the Coen brothers with that movie.
They really
have. And every year, every season, it seems to have a vibe that's totally different than the next. And on the vibes, just click, click, click.
Yeah, you would think after each season, you go, well, you can't do anymore. He's done it. And then he comes around, and it's like, wow, that's different. And this season is different than the previous four seasons in many ways, and it's just so well done. And this, John.
And finally, before you go, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You were.
No, I would just say, if people have been watching the show, John Hamm plays a sheriff, and this is the best. He's been a lot of good things since Mad Men, but in my opinion, this is the best thing he's been in, and his best performance since Mad Men. He's just so good in this.
Mm-hmm. And what show are you looking forward to that's premiering this year? And that either you or the people that pop you questions, what are they looking forward to?
They're looking for more simplicity and some kind of regulation, if necessary, to eliminate blackouts. That's probably the biggest thing, if people could wave a magic wand and change one thing in television. It would be to eliminate channel blackouts created by carriage fights between TV providers and broadcasters or programmers. It really frustrates people. They can't understand it.
Well, you should be very happy that Comcast made the deal with Paramount for CBS and all their cable channels, because that blackout might have happened on New Year's Day, and it didn't, because they did come out to an agreement right before New Year's Eve.
And Sinclair also signed a deal with Verizon same time, averting a blackout as well.
Mm-hmm.
But DirecTV is now involved in three blackouts. Dish is involved in four. They just can happen anytime, and it drives people crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing is for sure, you will not be driven crazy if you get the questions you want to Philip Swan, the TV Answer Man. And here is where you go online, tvanswerman.com. And incidentally, besides the answers, he also provides some wonderful stories about the whole TV scene in general, both content and technology. Well worth reading, tvanswerman.com. Philip, it's great to have you back. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
of course, to you and your whole crew. Have a wonderful year ahead. Great viewing and great answering.
Great. Thank you very much. You have a great day and a great 2024.
You too. And keep making television easy again.
My job.
You got it. Take care.
Thanks, Simon. Bye-bye.
Philip Swan, the TV Answer Man, joining us live from Owings, Maryland. When we come back, our classic trivia question, first one of 2024. If you're first with the correct answer, seven prizes will come your way. And later in our second hour, we'll be joined by Cassius Michael Kim. He is the executive producer and director of the new Netflix documentary, their first one of this year, Man on the Run, that premieres Friday. That's all coming your way in our second hour, right after we pause at the top of this hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reach over 100 million listeners around the world every month. and growing. One of BTR's favorite shows comes your way and kicks off 2024 Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We're talking about the Hilltop Radio Show, a wonderful music program that's one of BTR's long-running favorites. The Hilltop Radio Show kicks off 2024 Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, Best BTR always coming your way 24/7 on YouTube. Welcome to the second hour of our first 2024 episode, Tomorrow We Televise, live from New York. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from the Big Apple. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Hope you have a wonderful start to your new year. By the way, I want to say hi to my brother Gary, who gave me a nice Happy New Year message on my smartphone. So thank you for that, Gary. Love you always as well. And I want to let you know that this hour of our program is brought to you by Wild, the reusable, refillable, natural deodorant that's kind to your body and the planet. 43 degrees at the top of this hour. Coming away later in the hour, our final guest for this first program of our new year, and that is Cassius Michael Kim. He is the executive producer and director of Netflix's first documentary program, Man on the Run, which premieres on Friday. Any question or comment in the meantime, give us a call. Anything about television, it's game for us. 646-652-2906. That is the number you use. It's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And we have our chat room still in business. Snowman James is in the room, so join Mr. Snowman or Ms. Snowman. It's SimonApple04 by name, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. Now, before we go any further, it's time to bring you our first classic trivia question of 2024. Believe it or not, we have been doing this feature for probably nine, almost 10 years, and we've had lots of winners along the way. So here's your first chance this new year to win. And if you're first with the correct answer to the question I'm about to bring you, we have seven, that's right, seven prizes in play. First up, our brand new prize, the 2024 American Express Pocket Calendar. That's right, the 2024 American Express Pocket Calendar. It is a wonderful thing you put in your pocket or coat pocket or jacket pocket, and it's great, carried around all the time to and from work or anywhere. Gives you a great opportunity to put down whatever you need to do at a certain day or time. It's really, really wonderful. Plus, that's just one of our seven prizes. We've got an AMC Networks provided Uber card. We have a free Redbox movie night, courtesy of the fine folks at Crackle Connect. We have two wonderful CDs for you, the Lifetime Women in Rock CD with classic performances by the likes of the Bangles, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, Cyndi Lauper, Annie Lennox and the Eurythmics, Branorama, and many, many more. And Chicago Greatest Hit CD with super tunes like If You Leave Me Now, Saturday in the Park, Feeling Stronger Every Day, 25-64, and so on. And beyond all that, we have two books for you. One is Jeff Melvoin's terrific book, Running the Show, Television from the Inside. Jeff is the award-winning writer, showrunner of CBS's Northern Exposure. This book was a big seller last fall on Amazon. And he's still doing, by the way, special presentations of that book and its content. The next one, by the way, is coming up, I believe, a week or two from now in Los Angeles. The other book we're offering is Apocalypse Television, How the Day After, that's the movie that was on ABC 40 years ago, helped end the Cold War, by USC professor David Craig, who was on our show last fall. All seven prizes can be yours if you are the first to know the answer to this question. And let me set the question up. Back in the 1950s, one of the most popular shows on the air was The Millionaire. It was an anthology show that ran from 1955 to 1960. And the whole idea was that every episode would feature somebody who received tax-free $1 million to do whatever they wanted to do. The person giving the check was Michael Anthony, played by Marvin Miller, wonderful actor and voiceover announcer extraordinaire. And he was the executive secretary to The Millionaire. And that's our question. Who was the millionaire on The Millionaire? Who was the millionaire on The Millionaire? We are looking for the character's name, not the actor who played him or her. We want the actor's name who played that character. And we need the answer exactly. Who was the millionaire on The Millionaire? Incidentally, if you need help, episodes on YouTube. And you can also check out the bio of the series on Wikipedia. So all you got to do, if you know the answer, email me, And the email is simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, when you email, enclose your name and your mailing address so that if you are first correct answer, we get the prizes to you as soon as possible. Again, the question, who was the millionaire on The Millionaire? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if you're first with that answer, you win. Again, we need the exact name of the character that is The Millionaire. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and X or Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. And remember, first one in gets the win. So in order to win, you got to play in. So do so today. If we have time, we will post. We will bring you the question again before this hour is over. Okay? Okay. Let's see if we can get a winner right off the bat and start 2024 in a wonderful winning fashion. After all, Powerball could do it. Last night, somebody is going to get, $800 million? Probably $400 million when you cut the taxes out. Pretty good thing. Why? Because they were in it to win it. So you should be too. Again, if we have time, we'll give you the question one more time before the hour is done. Now, for those of you that are joining us for the very first time, and I hope that's many of you, you should know that this is a program about TV's current and future. And we are on 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, Tuner Radio. And then immediately after we're done, whether it's 60 or 90 or 120 minutes from now, we then go on podcast. And I'm very happy to say that last year, we went from having just a few podcast platforms to more than 40. Right now, it's around 44, 45. iHeartRadio was our first podcast platform over 4 years ago. And we had iTunes. And then we had the podcast platforms of Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, our simulcast partners. Now we are joining in 2024. We now have on board Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Acast, Odyssey, that's A-U-D-A-C-Y, that's the former CBS Radio. We also have Luminary, Fathom. We have a lot of independent podcast sites, too. We're trying to get on other ones as well. And we are really cooking. As we ended last year and we're starting this year, we are now getting thousands of podcast listens a week. That's right, thousands of podcast listens a week. And that is thanks to all of you out there tuning into this program and letting podcast sites you love know that you'd like to hear this program, and we do appreciate you. So thank you so much. And incidentally, if there is a podcast site that doesn't take our show that you like, please let them know. Be civil about it. Let me know. Let me know who to talk to. We'll do that, and hopefully we will get on. So that would be really terrific. So again, you can email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. You also find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Now, coming up, hopefully before the bottom of the hour, we will be joined by our final guest of this day, and that's Cassius Michael Kim. He is the executive producer and director of a new documentary, the first that Netflix will be showing this year, called Man on the Run. It is about an Asian tycoon who literally became a scam artist, sort of the scamming version of our modern day of the Great Gatsby. Some might call him the real-life Wolf of Wall Street. So Cash will be along, hopefully around the bottom of the hour, to discuss this project, where he got involved with some journalists from Vice and HBO and other places to make it happen. All right? And when that happens, we want you to give us a call. The show is better when you are interactive with yours truly and our guests. So all you got to do is pick up the phone and call 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio. And incidentally, if you can't hear our show live, you can still participate by phone. All you got to do is, you know, if you're driving, pull to the side of the road, if you're in the office, go to the computer and catch our show that way. And if you know the number, 646-652-2906, give us a call with your smartphone, landline, et cetera. Again, the number is good anywhere you are catching the program, whether you catch us live Or if you can't catch us live or at all, use the number. If you know who the guests are, use that number, and we let you know, and we get you on the air. Very, very simple. I want to take a moment to let you know about our top five episodes of last year, according to the listens on Blog Talk Radio. So we don't have – it's not based on our podcast sites or on our simulcast partners, TuneIn Radio and Spreaker. It's all BTR listens, people listened on Blog Talk Radio. So let me give you our top five episodes of 2023. Number five, nearly a year ago, January 30th, it was our episode featuring the GoPro channel, a channel that was going to be distributed by Cineverse, formerly Cinedigm. Hasn't yet, still in play. That was our number five. Number four, more recently, on November 3rd, we showcased an HBO documentary special that got great acclaim called Stand Up and Shout. John Legend was a co-producer. We had Amy Schatz, the executive producer. It got great reviews, got great response. By the way, it also gave it, we had 60, at least 60 downloads on Zencaster, one of our podcast groups alone, over since that time. And I might add that Amy Schatz was featured at Urban World. The special was there. She brought some of the people involved, and that was great. Wonderful time meeting her. She really enjoyed the interview very, very much. And the people at Urban World who saw the special loved it as well. We also had on that episode another new channel that just started called Sedgy TV. So that's our number four. Number three was on February 27th. Where we had a double dose of new networks. One is True Blue. It's a crime-oriented network which features Chris Hansen, the former Dateline to Catch a Predator reporter. And Chris was on the show along with his partner putting together. We also had Canyon Star TV, the country bluegrass unique music channel and lifestyle channel. It's doing very well, incidentally, going into 2024. That was our number three show. Number two, on April 6th, we had a series called Good Women, and we had two networks to showcase, Profile and Retroactive TV. That was our number two. And our number one came about a month later. It featured The Muppets Mayhem, the executive producers of Disney Plus series, which even though it only ran a season, got great acclaim, got the Emmy Award recently for Best Live Action Family Programming. We also had a preview of ABC's miniseries, The Game Show Game, all about game shows. That was our number one episode of last year on Blog Talk Radio. So thanks to everybody who listened in. Thanks to everybody who participated by phone or chat room with those episodes and with others. We really appreciate you out there, and we hope that you keep on making us a regular habit. Again, we are usually on Mondays and Fridays. Sometimes we have an extra third episode. We're going to be doing more of these triple header weeks as we go along. And we also hope hopefully down the road this year to maybe bring back the simulcast of our show that we did locally back in 2014-2015 on Brooklyn Independent Media from the Barclays Center, the near Barclays Center, Brick Media House. Brick TV is now what that service is known as. Brick TV is available on the cable systems serving New York City proper, including Spectrum and Charter Spectrum and Optimum, formerly owned by Cablevision, now owned by Altice USA. So we hope you tune in, and we'd love to hear from you anytime, by the way. You can always reach me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's my email. You can also reach me on Facebook, LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum, and X or Twitter at UBCSimonTWT. We really do appreciate what you have to say. And as we will say at the end of every episode, what you say matters now more than ever. And that's why when you communicate with me, I communicate back with you within 24 hours. That is our promise to you. Now, before we bring you our final guest of this first two-hour episode of 2024, we're going to bring you a feature that we started last year called Something I'd Like to See. And it's where we showcase a topic or two that I would like to see something done about it. And we always appreciate your feedback, too. So today, I'd like to showcase two sports subjects. For those of you who didn't hear the first hour, one of the things that I've been doing now for nearly a year is to be part of a program once a week called Sports Newswire. I do a segment about the world of TV sports, and usually it's on Wednesday. Sports Newswire comes your way at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, our news information show hosted by Craig out of Florida and other people too sometimes. and it's available on Sports Grid Network. Wonderful service available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, Amazon Freevee, and other wonderful multi-channel phones like Vocal Now, and so forth. And something I'd like to see after watching so many bowl games is fewer bowl games, college football bowl games. Now, as you know, last night we had the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl that determined who is going to go to the national championship game a week from yesterday. Alabama and Michigan, what a game, crazy game, a thriller from start to finish. And then we had Washington, Texas. Washington pulled it out. It was 21-21 at the half. Then Washington came out to a lead. Finally, Texas came back, and they were one play away from tying the game or maybe winning it. So it'll be Washington and Michigan going for the marbles next Monday night, live on ESPN and probably ESPN2 and other ESPN networks, the MegaCast format. And that will bring to the end what, frankly, may go down as the worst college football bowl season ever. Why was it? Think about this. More than 80 teams in Division I were invited to bowl games. Now, I grew up on the idea that a college football bowl game was a reward you had for a well-played regular season. It was not for teams that barely passed with a 7-5 record or broke even with a 6-6 record or actually lost more games than they won at a 5-7 record. And that's what a lot of bowl games have come down to. Too many teams are playing in bowl games that don't deserve to be in bowl games. This year, we saw this past season, which started in mid-December, we saw too many 6-6 teams play against each other. Many of the games were lopsided. Many of the games were played in half-empty stadiums. Even the Fiesta Bowl game yesterday, the Verbo Fiesta Bowl, was played with portions of that stadium on both sides of the goalposts, either end where the goalposts were. We saw a lot of empty seats. That's the Liberty-Oregon game, by the way, where Liberty started out, looked like they were going to give Oregon a tough time, and then with the opening touchdown, then Bo Nix and crew just demolished Liberty. And by the way, great for Liberty to have a 13-0 season, a 12-0 regular season, won the Conference USA Championship. They deserve to be in a New Year's Day bowl game. And they were a good team. They really are. And they met up against a better team. Bo Nix just had an amazing, and that defense played an amazing game. However, that was unfortunately the rule. Too many lopsided bowl games and too many featuring teams that did not deserve to be in. On top of that, we had a bowl game, the Arizona Bowl, the Barstool Sports World, was CW's first ever nationally televised bowl game that had some of the weirdest things going on. Trust me on this. With 12 minutes and 50 seconds to go in the game, it was Toledo versus Wyoming. The game stopped, I repeat, stopped for a field goal kicking contest, one person playing for a new PlayStation, one person playing for a car. I have never in 43 years plus now of covering television and so many years of watching bowl games and college football, BCS, and championship playoff games, I have never seen a game stopped for a field goal kicking or other type of contest like that. Never. Unbelievable. I hope that's not where things are going. Although I have to say, I thought the commentary by the Barstool Sports people was really wild. I mean, they were brutal on both teams, Toledo and Wyoming. You know, when a punt was like going crazy, like that was a disgusting punt. I kid you not. That's what one of the people said. I mean, it was even crazier than Pat McAfee and what they said in the field pass yesterday during the Michigan-Alabama game. Unbelievable. There's just too many. It's way out of hand. No wonder ESPN is not giving out the results of the game. They have not given out viewership numbers for any of their bowl games. Now, hopefully, between now and when I go on Sports Grid Network tomorrow morning, we will get at least the viewership for the college football semifinal playoff games from late yesterday and last night. But I'm going to guess, and I hope it's a good guess, No, I'm not going to hope. I'm going to declare, it's a good guess, that the bowl numbers are atrocious. Now, what can be done about it? A couple things. First of all, ESPN has got to cut a lot of the bowl games that they own because it's not working. Two, the NCAA must make a rule that rather than be winning six games to be bowl eligible, you win eight. That's two-thirds of your regular season games. We're in a 12-game season. The six came with an 11-game season. A number of years ago, it went to 12 games. So let's change the rule. Eight games, you're bowl eligible. If you don't win eight games, you don't go, period. Period, period, period. Third, the transfer portal has to be addressed. Too many games suffered because of people opting out, major players, and in some cases coaches, because of the transfer portal or because they decided I'm going to the draft. Caleb, many of the quarterbacks, like North Carolina's Drake Mays and Caleb Williams and Jason Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner, all opted out. Now, you could call it cowardly, or you could call it, hey, how about, you know, live up to your commitment. If you got your team to a bowl game, do the bowl game. I think something has to happen. I'm not sure what. Something has to happen with the transfer portal and the NFL draft situation so that more of these players are encouraged and empowered to play with their team. Coaches also. So I'd like to hear what you think. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. We have a few minutes before we get our final guest on. You can give me a call right now, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, simonapple04 by name. And one more something I'd like to see. I mentioned in our news notes on our final show of 2023 this past Sunday afternoon that there used to be a National Hockey League game on New Year's Day called the Winter Classic. NBC started when they had the games. The idea was, let's play a game New Year's Day afternoon as an alternative to college football. It will be played on a hockey rink in a stadium outdoors. Guess what? There was such a game. Believe it or not, we've had this Winter Classic now for 13 years, and yesterday afternoon there was such a game. It was in Seattle. Where the Seattle Mariners play in baseball. It had the Seattle Kraken and the Vegas Golden Knights, two teams that have really become, in very short order, one of the top teams in the NHL. TNT carried the game. Kenny Albert was the play-by-play person. If you didn't know about it, well, it's not your fault. Why? Because TNT didn't publicize the game. How could they not publicize it? If they had this game with these two top teams, why was there no publicity? Why no promotional spots on the air and on their other networks, TNT, TBS, and True TV? What gives here? If they did that to their NBA games, they'd be crucified. Why not present this game? And by the way, this is the network that ran the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time ever on cable television last spring and summer. Why not? I couldn't believe it. Could not believe it. TNT, you got to do a better job with the NHL. That's it. Especially now that the games are also running on Max, either live or on tape. If you want to keep the National Hockey League, you got to do a better job publicizing it. This was Bush League. And the game was okay. Seattle, as when I saw it, was 2-0 on Vegas. It was still like early second period. So TNT, you got to do better with hockey. I've also seen the pregame show you do. You do a very good pregame show, very much like Inside the NBA. Wayne Gretzky is one of the people that do all the commentary in that pregame show. And again, you don't publicize it. How do you expect people to watch your games if you don't publicize it? It's crazy. So come on, TNT. Start this new year off right. Let's not have, and if you're going to have the Winter Classic, then promote it. Let people know it's on there so they have the opportunity to have it be a great alternative to college football or anything else that happens on New Year's Day. Again, I'd like to hear what you think. Give me a call, 646-652-2906, in the chat room, or email me afterwards, simonapple04@yahoo.com, or find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and X, or Twitter. And again, probably have more to say about this tomorrow on Sports Grid Network, on Sports News Wire, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on Sports Grid Network. We'll also talk about the new Women's Pro League. It turned out they did have a TV contract, so that's the deal, and we'll see what happens. We will have our final guest today coming your way shortly, Cassius Michael Kim, I should say, from the new Netflix documentary special coming this Friday, Man on the Run. But first, let's pause for a message from Wild. Are you out to make your personal well-being more natural and eco-friendly? Then give Wild a try. You know, Wild deodorant has natural ingredients that freshen you anytime for any occasion. Wild comes in a variety of scent and color combinations, such as jasmine, mandarin blossom, or fresh cotton sea salt. I use it regularly. I started using it last year. It's great. Rubs on wonderful. Has a wonderful case that you just put the refills in. And speaking of the refills, there's no harsh chemicals to fret about. And if you want that refill, it gets delivered right to your door. And it's very easy with the case to put it in and then use it. So go Wild today. If you do, you get a special discount of 25% off your order when you use the promo code SIMONAPPLE04 at checkout. So again, if you want that special discount of 25% off your first order, go to wearewild.com, use the promo code SIMONAPPLE04 at checkout. Go ahead and try Wild. It is the reusable, refillable, natural deodorant that's kind to your body and the planet. On Friday, Netflix will present its first documentary of 2024. And if you know Netflix, you know they've had a wonderful run with great documentaries, many of which have won Emmy Awards, some nominated for Oscars, some nominated for other awards as well. And their first documentary of this new year is called Man on the Run. And it's about one of the largest financial scandals in recent history. And the person at the center of this story is somebody from Malaysia named Joe Lowe. He is somebody who you might call, maybe, the real-life Wolf of Wall Street. Joining us live to talk about this documentary program on Netflix that premieres on Friday is executive producer and director Cassius Michael Kim. Cassius, welcome in and Happy New Year to you.
Thanks for having me. Happy New Year to you as well.
And where are you calling us from on this Tuesday?
Los Angeles.
Great. So how did you get involved in putting this documentary together?
Well, you know, I think this is a story that's been out there in the ether for a very long time. You know, the tendrils of it touch so many different aspects of our society that people are familiar with, like Hollywood, Wall Street, international foreign policy. But for something so grand and vast and ridiculous, I thought there just wasn't the kind of, I guess, recognition of the entire story in the public. You know, I don't think that many people may have heard little bits and pieces of the story, but few people know just how intricate and involved it really is. I also read the book Billion Dollar Whale by Bradley Hope and Tom Wright, which is a great summation of the core of the story. And it just felt like something that was screaming to be given the documentary treatment.
Human Medium just joined our chat room. Thanks for coming aboard. Happy 2024 to you. If you have a question or comment for our guest, or yours truly, make the call, 646-652-2906, or put your thoughts in the room, and we will interact with them as soon as you do. Again, SIMONAPPLE04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/Tello. So talk about this person. My understanding is that he not only is sort of like a Wolf of Wall Street, but he actually has some dealings Leonardo DiCaprio, who played that character in that famous movie.
Well, I think it all starts with the fact that Joe Lowe and his co-conspirator, Riza Aziz, who is the stepson of the former prime minister of Malaysia, they took stolen money from the 1MDB Sovereign Wealth Fund and financed the film The Wolf of Wall Street. Now, his relationship with Leonardo DiCaprio predated this, as Leonardo was one of many celebrities who Joe Lowe commissioned and would pay six-figure sums nightly to just hang out and party with them.
Hmm. Hilo Minion, by the way, just offered us thank you in the chat room for announcing that he's there. So again, Hilo, if you have a question or comment, make the call or put your thoughts in the room and we will address them. We're going to take a quick break for web identification, and then we will have more with Cassius Michael Kim, the executive producer director of the new Netflix documentary, Man on the Run. It's one of their first original programs of the year, and it premieres on Friday. He will join us live from Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reach over 100 million lists around the world and growing. One of the most popular shows, weekdays on BTR, that's January Jones, She starts a new season on Thursday, regular time, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. The January Jones Show starts its 2024 season this Thursday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best BTS joint for 7 at YouTube. Welcome back to our final half hour of this opening two-hour 2024 edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Abbott, I'm with you live from New York, 43 degrees, and still sunny as the sun's about to go down here in the Big Apple at the bottom of the hour. And a question or comment for our guest, Cassius Michael Kim, the executive producer and director of the new Netflix special, Man on the Run. It's the first documentary of the year, starting on January 5th. Make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Cassius Healer Medium, who just joined our chat room, says he remembers this story, and this person says that this person was a baller. Is that a good description of this?
I think it is pretty accurate. You know, one of the first times JoLo entered the public consciousness was when he was name-dropped in page 6 of the New York Post for dropping, you know, tens of thousands of dollars at the Marquee nightclub.
And Human Medium has a question. Where did you film this? Were you able to get footage out of Asia? And if so, where? And if not, how did you put this together?
Yeah, you know, we filmed in London, New York, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, and all over Malaysia. We spent about 3 weeks filming in Malaysia and about 35 days of total shooting and interviewed most of the primary players involved in the scandal in Malaysia, including the former Prime Minister Najib Razak, who is now in prison.
Mm-hmm. In the press release about this, you mentioned that this person spread a very big financial web. How big? How clandestine was this?
I mean, we're talking between $4.5 to $7 billion stolen from the sovereign wealth fund 1MDB over the course of 5 to 7 years, and a web of co-conspirators that numbers in the dozens, if not hundreds. There are so many people that got a piece of the pie, whether through Malaysian connections, Middle East connections, or through the involvement of Goldman Sachs. And not only is it just the people who stole the money, but it's kind of all the middlemen who are used to launder the money, but also whitewash and launder the reputations of the thieves. You know, there are all kinds of lawyers and PR people and people who were not afraid to just take the dollar and turn a blind eye to the crimes. And that's not even talking about the celebrities who leached off the teat of JoLo for many years without asking any questions about where this money was coming from. There are also celebrities who, even after the story broke in the press, were willing to take his money in the pursuit of their own ill-gotten gains.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned Leonardo DiCaprio, who was the star of The Wolf of Wall Street. Did you try to reach him or Martin Scorsese, who directed the film?
We reached out to Leonardo's people, not Martin Scorsese. I mean, look, I want to be clear. I don't think there's any proof that any of these celebrities – well, not any, some of them, okay? But, you know, someone like Leonardo, certainly he didn't ask the questions, but he also wasn't privy to the fact that this was stolen money at the time that this was happening, right? But obviously most of the high-profile people we reached out to kind of just did not respond or did not want to take part in this. And there's a little summation of all the outreach we did at the end of the film.
Now, by the way, you were not the only person that was involved in making this film. You actually had some very interesting reporters and journalists that did a lot of research and a lot of reporting to make it happen. One is a woman named Elise Shoreland, who worked on Vice News Tonight, the award-winning HBO magazine that won 2 Emmy Awards in 2019. You also had Renata Nator, who worked on PBS NewsHour and ABC News as well as Vice. Talk about their contribution to the reporting of this situation.
Yeah, we had an incredible team of producers and journalists who helped research and produce the film. You know, it's such a huge story. We needed every person to pitch in their best effort, and we certainly couldn't have made this film without their help. Elif was responsible for overseeing the Goldman Sachs angle of the film. Rana handled stuff that percolated to D.C. and foreign policy and was also in the field with us in Malaysia. And Elif was also in the field with us in New York. You know, their journalistic bona fides are excellent. And it was really wonderful to have them on board and couldn't have made the film without them.
You're hearing Cassius Michael Kim. He is the executive producer and director of Netflix's first documentary program this year, Man on the Run. It comes your way this Friday on Netflix, available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles. Cassius joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour as we get ready to wrap up our first edition of the program All About TV's Current and Future. Coming up, I'm with you live from New York. Voices reads the bottom of the hour. Let's hear from you. Make a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. This is the first of three episodes we're kicking off the year on. We have one more coming your way on tomorrow and then another on Friday, another two-hour show. Coming your way tomorrow, we're going to highlight a new series that premiered late last month on Chime TV, the Asian American Network. It is their first original scripted program. It's very unique. It's called Cross My Mind, and it's an East meets West kind of affair. Part of it shot in Los Angeles, part of it shot in Hong Kong. You will hear from Wesley Chan. He is the co-founder of Wong Fu Productions that did the Los Angeles part of Cross My Mind. And we also hope to have live from Hong Kong, our first ever guest from there, Thomas Lowe. He is the director. He's also a key executive at, you might say, the Netflix of Hong Kong, MyTV Super. That's coming your way tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Cassius, what was the toughest thing about making this?
You know, I think one of the most difficult things is kind of wrapping your arms around the enormous scope of the story and trying to figure out how to condense that into something that's not too long, but also streamlined enough for the audience to understand upon viewing. And that's more of like an editorial concern, but you know, the other part of it was just filming while the pandemic was still happening and then gaining access to Malaysia while the country was shut down. So in terms of a logistical challenge, kind of navigating those concerns as related to international production and making sure we're able to, you know, get what we need in the time we have, you know, like the crew caught COVID at one point and we had to cancel our New York shoot and reschedule it several times. And, you know, there was an incident where because myself and our cinematographer both came down with COVID, we were working remotely with a skeleton crew in D.C. as our excellent production crew kind of did the majority of the labor as we, you know, were only able to communicate with them virtually. But really, it's just about the story, right? Even now, I think, you know, it clocks in right around an hour 38, but it's a lot of information, and it's just making those kind of decisions on what is the right amount of information to give the viewer and what is the right amount of context and really what's most important to teach people and educate people on when, you know, it's such a visual medium. And the last thing you want is for it to feel like a visual podcast. So trying to make it interesting and, you know, move beyond just kind of the financial machinations of what happened.
Was this documentary aimed at Netflix all along, and what kind of support have they given you? I know that Netflix has a great reputation for years for really supporting documentary producers.
No, actually, this is something that we undertook independently. So my company, The Smoking Section, and our partners, Evergreen Media, this was an independently financed documentary, which was released theatrically in England, Ireland, the United States, Singapore, and Malaysia. And then after release, we were able to negotiate a licensing deal with Netflix. So this is not a Netflix original. This is our production, which Netflix saw and was interested in licensing to their platform. And obviously, that was kind of our goal all along because Netflix is the biggest streaming platform in the world, and we want as many people as possible to be able to watch the film. So we were able to come to terms with Netflix in the last few months, and we're honored to be on the platform.
Mm-hmm. Going back to making this, were there any huge dead ends that you and your fellow journalists encountered in trying to get the full story about this person?
Well, The first biggest dead end would be Joe Lowe, right? I mean, I think we expended a lot of effort trying to locate Joe Lowe, and I do have a number of methods that are, you know, vetted to be able to contact him, but, of course, he never responded to any of our entreaties. Also, you know, we embarked on a number of negotiations with a lot of the people accused of committing the crimes. And those went down, you know, circuitous routes. But ultimately, several of them pulled out, probably because of legal concerns. Two of them specifically were, you know, in trial at the time and waiting sentencing. So I've been told that the government highly recommended that they not do media. So that was that. But, you know, at the same time, like someone like Tim Leisner, who was the primary Goldman Sachs banker responsible for this, while he ultimately did not sit down with us, even though it was expressed to us that he was very interested in doing so, you know, one of our producers, Brigida Carlin, attended every day of his trial and took extensive notes and recorded his testimony. So we knew what was being said, and, you know, we were able to at least utilize that information and give it to the viewer in a different way. It would have been interesting to have him on camera and then have him say the words himself, but, you know, we may do what we could.
Yeah. You mentioned issues with the pandemic in putting this together. What kind of cooperation did you get not only from the Malaysian government but also from the business community there?
Well, I mean, it was more just like a logistical challenge. So we were given special dispensation to enter Malaysia. But luckily, the most restrictive of the travel restrictions expired within 2 weeks of our arrival. So we were then able to fly in a couple of the exclusive FBI voices that are in the film, Charles O'Neill and David Smith, who were both previously legal attaché officers based in Kuala Lumpur and were instrumental in funneling information from the Malaysian people fighting 1MDB to the Department of Justice and in building the United States case against 1MDB. You know, it was a different time in Malaysia, and I was recently there this summer premiering the film, and the vibe is so different now that the country is not locked down. When we were filming this, you know, we had to wear masks everywhere, including outside. Most places had, you know, restrictions on the number of people that could be there. You know, as you can imagine, Malaysia was one of the more restrictive environments around the world during the lockdown. So just navigating that and getting the proper permits and being able to film, it was a logistical challenge. But, you know, thanks to our excellent Malaysian partners at Project Room and our Malaysian producer, Fabian Joseph, we were able to get it all done.
How did you get into documentary filmmaking or just nonfiction making?
You know, I started an independent film about 20 years ago at the company This Is That. And from there, I just transitioned to, you know, a career in production. I think ending up in nonfiction was just kind of a byproduct of, you know, where the jobs were, right? When you're trying to build a career, you try to get a job wherever you can. And then I was lucky enough to land at ABC News and then subsequently at CNN, where just my interest in storytelling led me to pursuing longer and longer form storytelling. You know, one of my favorite projects I've ever done was The Wunderlist with Bill Weir, which aired on CNN back in 2014 through 2017 and is available on Max to stream. And that was a show about the most amazing places in the world and how they're changing for the next generation. After I left CNN and started The Smoking Section, my own production company, I worked for Mark Levin and Blowback Productions, where we did the documentary Stockton on My Mind for HBO Documentaries. And, you know, it's always about just challenging myself to tell important stories around the world. Thanks to my work at ABC News and CNN, you know, my background is in international production, which came in very handy during the making of Man on the Run. And I look forward to more and more challenging projects in the future.
Incidentally, the program that Cassius has mentioned, Stocks on My Mind, was nominated for at least one, maybe two, 2021 News and Documentary Emmy Awards.
Yes. thanks for mentioning that.
Outstanding current affairs documentary. That's a darn good thing.
Yeah, it was an excellent story. It's about the former mayor of Stockton, Michael Tubbs Jr., who was the youngest mayor of a major metropolitan city and was also the first person to institute a pilot universal basic income program in America. So we were kind of just following Michael's journey and these progressive policy programs he instituted in a country, in a city that had recently declared bankruptcy under his predecessor and was going through some tough times, and just kind of the changes he was trying to make in his community. And it was a really inspiring time. I'm sad to say he's no longer the mayor and he was taken down by a misinformation campaign, and Stockton is once again kind of in the doldrums with the current administration. But, you know, it's kind of where the country's heading sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Man on the Run, Netflix's first documentary presentation of the year, comes your way Friday on that service. Available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. We have got the executive producer and director of this presentation, Cassius Michael Kim, joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tamavi Televised. And if you want to get a question or feedback in before we wrap up, before the top of the hour, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have another two-hour episode coming your way Friday on Tamavi Televised. We'll kick it off with the Senior Vice President of Trusted Media Brands. That's the folks that give you channels like The Pet Collective, Fail Away, and People Are Awesome. Jill Goldfarb will be our lead guest. And then one of the top TV technology observers, the one and only Shelley Palmer, makes a long-awaited return to this program. He is going to CES 2024 next week in Las Vegas, and we'll find out what he thinks the smart TV set makers, device makers, are going to announce. He's also going to do interviews on site with the likes of Mark Cuban, Will.i.am, and Linda Yaccarino, the chief executive officer, second in command to Elon Musk of X or Twitter. In our second hour, we'll have the chief operating officer of one of those services that recently premiered thanks to Fast Channel TV, which was in our opening hour. Hip Hop TV is the name of the service. And Khalid Mahboub, who is the chief operating officer, he'll stick off our second hour. Finally, we will get into a new mega content service called Sunstream. It is trying to be a mega content service for independent filmmakers and TV makers. We'll have the president of that service, Garrett Sutton. Plus, we'll feature a father and son team to put together a unique original movie called Kangaroo Kids that premiered on that service last month. We're talking about Branscum and Fiara Richmond. That's all coming your way Friday, Pacific New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. One of our chat room people wanted to ask you how you feel about how news has been produced lately.
Well, I mean, that's a loaded question. I guess I would ask, you know, in what context? I think in a general sense, the biggest problem with news is that it's treated as a for-profit initiative in America when it should not be a for-profit initiative. It should be for the public. And the gamification of news coverage, where instead of presenting the facts objectively, there's always this like horse race mentality about winners and losers, and also a false equivalence because not everything has both sides. The truth doesn't always have both sides. But listen, when news is predicated on ratings and chasing ad dollars, the viewer and the audience is always going to be left out in the cold because there are always going to be ulterior motives for why the news is presented in a certain way. Or, you know, more often it's really about errors of omission. I mean, my time working for news outlets, I can't name a single instance where I was told not to cover something, but, you know, watching from the outside, you can certainly wonder why certain topics aren't covered.
One thing I've talked about in recent episodes here, but also elsewhere, is I would love to see the McNeil Air Report come back. The idea of a half hour or an hour program every night, which explores one topic from all different angles, gets people involved from those different angles, and brings everybody together to try to find some common ground. I love that program. I was an intern on it back in 1977-78, and I think we should have that program back because
I agree with you completely, yeah. But, I mean, I think the bigger question is, who would watch it at this point, right? Like, the attention span of this country is so fragmented, and it's, I think, you know, this TikTok generation, they're being so poorly served by the sources of media out there. And I think the death of expertise, or kind of people who no longer believe in experts, right? Like, that's the biggest thing of concern for me, because now that everyone has a voice, like how do you know who you can trust?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And by the way, the person that gave us that chat room question before wants to thank you for your honest answer to that. Going back to your documentary, where is Joe Lowe now? Is he still on the run?
He is on the run. My sources tell me that he is being ferried around a number of locations in China and Hong Kong and Macau. Rumor has it that Chinese intelligence escorts Joe Lowe and his family from location to location, not necessarily staying in any one place for too long. I don't know how long that arrangement will last for Joe Lowe, but that's mm-hmm. the most recent information on his whereabouts.
Mm-hmm. You know, this documentary raises a really amazing story. Has anybody contacted you or your team to say, you know what, this might make a great made-for-TV movie or miniseries?
Oh, it's funny you mentioned that because I do believe that's already in progress. Someone optioned Billion Dollar Whale, the book I mentioned written by Bradley Hope and Tom Wright. And I do believe that there is a miniseries in development, if not in production, and it was the rights were optioned by the creators of Crazy Rich Asians, if I have it correctly.
Well, if they would like,
I'm glad
if they do get a deal
market.
To make this a miniseries or a made-for-TV movie, we'd love to have them on. So if you find out, let me know. We'll make the contact and see what happens from there.
Yeah,
what's
absolutely.
Next for you in terms of TV or documentary work?
You know, I'm waiting for this thing to drop, and I'm also eager to kind of experiment with narrative subject matter, not just documentaries, so I have a few things cooking in the works, but really just excited to see the reception to the film once it hits Netflix and take things from there.
And it will hit Netflix on Friday. Netflix, of course, available on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles with you. Again, the film is called Man on the Run. It premieres on Friday. And for more details online, go to Netflix.com. That's Netflix.com. Yes, Cash, you want to say something?
Excuse me?
I thought you said you wanted to say something.
I didn't say that.
Okay, so once again, Man on the Run. This Friday on Netflix. For more details online, Netflix.com. Cassius Michael Kim, thank you very much for joining us to talk about your film. Good luck with it when it premieres on Netflix. And all the best to you and your production team for a great 2024 ahead.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
Same here, Cassius. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye.
Cassius Michael Kim joining us live from Los Angeles, executive producer and director of Man on the Run, which will premiere this Friday on Netflix. Before we leave you, let's give you that classic trivia question one more time. It's our first one of the year, 7 prizes in play, including the 2024 American Express Pocket Calendar. And this is the question. Who was the millionaire on The Millionaire? We're looking for the character's name of the millionaire on that CBS series from 1955 to 1960, produced by Don Feddersen Productions and MCA TV. You can find reruns on YouTube. Who was the millionaire on The Millionaire? We need an exact name of the character on that program. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and your mailing address. So if you first correct the answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook or X or Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. One last time, who was the millionaire on The Millionaire? In order to win, you got to play in. Let's see if we can get that first winner of 2024. Pronto, okay? Okay. I want to thank all of our guests who joined us over the last 2 hours for being here and all of you for tuning in for our first episode of 2024. I hope that if you're joining us for the first time, you make us a regular habit. Starting tomorrow, we'll be back at our regular time, 3 Eastern New Pacific, and our guests will be from the Chime TV scripted series, their first one, Cross My Mind. We will have Wong Fu Productions co-founder and one of the key producers on the program, Wesley Chan from Los Angeles, and hopefully from Hong Kong Live, from the service My TV Super, director Thomas Lowe. If you came in late on today's program and you want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And use that, by the way, to catch all of our episodes or any of our episodes from this past year and earlier. You can also check us out on our website, TomorrowBeTelevised.com. That's TomorrowBeTelevised.com from the fine people at On Podium. And you can also check us out on the more than 40 podcast sites that take our program. A few moments from now, when we wrap up, that program will run on Audible.com, on Amazon Music, on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, iRadio's Podcast Network, Fathom, Luminary, and many, many more. So check us out on podcasts. And then if you like it, check us out live and tell your friends to do so as well. Again, we really appreciate you being part of the program, and we hope you make us a regular habit throughout 2024, because it's going to be one whale of a television year in so many different avenues and directions. So we want you involved, because the more you're interacting with us, the better you make the program. And remember, we love hearing from you. So please email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And incidentally, we have, and we hope to bring it back later this week, a regular feature called The Show to Know. Is there a TV show you like that doesn't get enough attention, like what I said earlier about TNT's lack of promotion for the NHL Winter Classic yesterday? Well, we want to give it attention, and we need to hear from you. So email me with the name of the program, whether it's a made-for-TV movie, series, special, why you think it deserves more attention. And if we use the suggestion on the air, you get the credit. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. You also find me on Facebook and follow me at LinkedIn and Twitter. Facebook, LinkedIn, Simon Applebaum, Twitter, or X at UBC Simon TWDT. That's Facebook, LinkedIn at SimonApple04 or at X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWDT. However you respond to me, I respond back to you within 24 hours. That's our promise to you, because what you say matters now more than ever, certainly in 2024. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not say those of Block Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's General Manager. Jay Sonnenberg is Head of Content. Website services provided by On Podium, the Internet's great podcast outpost. Guitar Spakus is our web coordinator. Marvel Televised was brought to you with limited commercial interruption today by Wild, the reusable, refillable, natural deodorant that's kind to your body and the planet. And by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks on the go wherever you go. Don't forget to use the special promo code Televised for BlendJet and SimonApple04 by Wild to get a discount on what they offer at checkout. For Marvel Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Have a superb start to 2024. And we'll be back tomorrow, regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where, Block Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, and all of our podcasts and web destinations. Whatever you are doing between now and then, please make it safe and make it great for you and others you love. And as we said on our final episode of last year, it's still worth saying today, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with you. Till the next time, stay well and stay tuned.